Welcome to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast with your host, Catherine M. White, founder and CEO of Accelerated Results 365. If you're an overachiever who's ready to hear what today's bleeding edge successful professionals are doing to create success in their business, you've come to the right place. On the show, Catherine interviews rockstar achievers who share their incredible tips, such as how they plow through roadblocks, outsmart the competition, grow a flourishing business, and reach unparalleled levels of performance. So kick back and get ready for a power-packed, insightful discussion with today's rockstar achiever.
Welcome to the show today. I am excited for our special guest today, who is a little bit unique from what we typically have on the show. Normally, we have a guest who has been down this path, and they've found the path that they want to be on, and they've achieved these great successes, and this individual has certainly achieved many successes, yet he is on the path currently in finding out what is it exactly that he is looking for, what is it that he wants to do, and really what is his purpose in life. And what I found very interesting and unique about this is that the path that he's been on, number one, has been a path that's unique to him and a path that most people wouldn't pursue. And in addition to that, he's on this path of nothing's going to stop me, and I'm not quite sure where I'm headed yet, but I know that it's out there and I am going to find it. And I just love that. I think that's a beautiful philosophy to have. So without any further ado, I would like to introduce our guest, David Mulqueen, who is the marketing manager at a company in Seattle, Washington, called Odd Dog Media. Now, David comes from a small town in Pennsylvania, the town of Waymart. And if you have ever watched The Office, then you are familiar with this area in which he calls home. From wrestling pigs, shearing sheep, playing sports, and traveling with his family, he eventually made his way to Westchester University to study accounting, which, of course, I have a special place in my heart for that because that, too, is what I studied. However, he realized that the accounting industry was not for him, so he quit. He sold everything he owned and traveled to New Zealand to become an internationally certified snowboard instructor. I have to say, I am a little bit envious about him in that. I would love to go to New Zealand, so he's got a heads up on me on that. After a year of chasing powder and living out of a suitcase for an entire year, staying in mold-ridden rooms and visiting countries where he barely spoke the language, he decided to head statewide where Seattle was calling his name. He made the transition into marketing and eventually found his way into digital marketing, finding his passion for helping local businesses. David says he's always been inspired by entrepreneurs, and he finds it very exciting not only to be working for one himself, but to also be working with other business owners throughout the greater Seattle area. And David, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really excited to hear more about your story. Wrestling pigs and shearing sheep, that's something that I myself have never experienced and find that very intriguing.
Well, thank you so much for the introduction there. And yeah, I think the upbringing of wrestling pigs and shearing sheep isn't the typical upbringing for someone. And, you know, a lot of people are always intrigued by it.
Absolutely. We typically, you know, when we're talking to somebody who is in business for themselves, that definitely is not the history that they typically have.
Yeah, well, I guess it kind of goes back to my parents. My mom is from England and my dad is from New Zealand, and they kind of packed up their things and they were kind of nomads for a little while and were working as traveling nurses. They met in New York City and they wanted to kind of get away from city life and start up more of a slower paced life in the country of Pennsylvania. And you know, I think what they were trying to do was to, you know, find ways to keep my brother and I occupied and trying to teach us responsibility. And, you know, one way that they wanted us to do that is by getting involved in a program called 4-H. And basically, you know, what it was is for us to, you know, go out and raise farm animals, you know, taking the responsibility for them, taking care of them, exercising them, being, you know, really meticulous about all of the expenses, because at the end of the day, we were raising these animals to sell them at the county fair. And kind of this whole process, you know, was, you know, obviously raising these animals, but also at the same time, you know, keeping track of all of the expenses and any, you know, any revenue that was generated from selling these animals was going to be used for college. So it was a really, really great way to kind of get involved in the local community and really learning how to be responsible for these animals. And, you know, at the same time, you know, being really productive with it and utilizing it to save for college. So it came with a lot of stories, a lot of great experiences, and, you know, it was a great childhood looking back on it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I heard in there, you were talking about your parents traveling like a nomad, and it hit me, and I thought, wow, that's where this nomadic lifestyle came from, that you had no hesitation in giving up everything, selling everything, and going and living out of a suitcase for a year.
Yeah, it was, I guess it's kind of in my DNA, you know, when I first talked to my parents about this idea, you know, they were really supportive, and, you know, there wasn't even any hesitation in my thought process from their end. You know, if anything, they were excited for me to go about it, because they'd done not the same thing, but, you know, I think travel is very relatable regardless of how you do it. And the fact that they'd done so much of it in their youth and still continue to do it to this day, that excitement from them was kind of a really, really good push for me to say, okay, hey, this is totally fine for me to do. And, you know, I don't know where I'm going, but, you know, I've got the support of my family here, and let's just jump right into it. And that's kind of how we ended up going for it.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the raising these farm animals and selling them and participating in 4-H, did your family actually have a business, or were you primarily using these animals for, like you said, the purposes of learning responsibility and earning money for college?
So I would say it's a little bit of both. The way that I describe it is that I grew up on a hobby farm. And for my parents having these animals, you know, we had a, you know, 4 acres, and we had this old 100-year-old barn that was doing nothing. And, you know, we decided to kind of fill it with animals, but it was always a hobby. I think my parents both came from, I think they'd grown up in the suburbs, but they had ties to family who worked on farms or who owned farms. And I think they really enjoyed that part of their family history, and they wanted to incorporate this into how my brother and I were brought up. And, but they didn't want to do it full time, because it's, you know, it's very, very laborious. It's time consuming. But they enjoyed the smaller aspect of it. So the way to think of it is it's a hobby farm, and, you know, animals would come and go. You know, we'd sometimes have a couple cows on the property. The pigs were mainly seasonal. But the sheep is something that we really got involved in, especially with it coming from my dad's side of the family, being from New Zealand, and, you know, sheep being a huge part of that country. The sheep is something that we continued to have on an annual basis there.
Mm-hmm. And so you gained a great understanding, more or less, of entrepreneurship at a young age. And
yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was one of those things where, you know, at a very, very small level here, it was, you know, hey, we're going to be making an investment into these animals, and, you know, taking care of them, going to the feed mill, making sure that their hooves are in check, you know, essentially they're your inventory, but you're still trying to make them as best as they possibly can be, whether that's exercising them, feeding the right type of diet, making sure that they're the right weight for the fair, that there's enough fat on them so that you can compete at an adequate level. And then at the end of the day, you know, going ahead and trying to sell them for a profit.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say were the greatest lessons that you took from this experience, and how do those apply into what you're doing or the path that you are currently on?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not entirely sure how to answer that. I think, you know, there's a certain part of me that is very competitive, and I think the competitive aspect of showing these animals is something that really kind of stuck with me. And you know, it was one of those things where, as a kid, you know, there's, I guess to give you a little bit of background, there's two parts of showing the animals. There's the showmanship aspect of it, and then there's the meat side of it, because these animals were going to be sold for produce, mainly for families who were kind of looking to support the program. But there was two sides of it. There was the showmanship side of how well you could present these animals, how well you could show off these animals. And that's something that I got very good at, and I excelled at pretty quickly and had always been a top performer in the showmanship side of things. But when it came to the actual, physical aspect of how well these animals were for produce, that was something that was a lot more challenging to compete on, because it was something where a judge was getting really hands-on with the animal to determine, you know, how much meat, I guess, and without getting into too detail, how much meat is on this animal and how well it is going to be presented, for eating purposes. And that was something that was really difficult to compete on, because it's based on a judge's opinion and what they like. And being a naturally competitive person, that was something that I always wanted to win. Whether it was the pigs or the sheep, and it was difficult to do, because you had all of these kids who wanted the same thing, and at the end of the day, if you were to win the show, that is where all the money was. And so we got pretty involved in this process. You know, we would get sheep from Ohio, we'd get pigs from Maryland, we'd try different farmers, but year after year, it was, you know, it was kind of a letdown. And you know, the last year that I was involved in 4-H, we had tried out this new pig farmer down in Maryland, and it was that in itself is a story. But we came back with two pigs that I was really excited about. And when we got to the show, we used some creative tactics to make the pig appear like it was bigger than it was in its particular class. And I guess at the end of the day, I ended up getting second place out of the entire show, which was super exciting. And it was kind of one of those things where it's like, you know, hard work does eventually pay off. And I think that's something that really, really stuck with me, is that, you know, even though you can get set back by, you know, rejection or whatever setbacks that come into your way, you can continue to push through and go into everything with a sense of optimism, and persistence, then, you know, at the end of the day, things can work out for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is a great lesson right there. Hard work does pay off, and you can overcome, push through those setbacks of rejection, which is a really big obstacle for a lot of people. That word you said, rejection, the big R word, nobody likes.
Yeah. And I know it's kind of a cliche thing to say, and, you know, it's something that you hear pretty regularly, but I think if it's, you know, sometimes people tend to shy away from those sort of things. And, you know, I just think it's really important to continue to push through that sort of stuff. And, you know, having the confidence in yourself and your abilities to go out and accomplish something like that.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of those ways that you would recommend that people can use to push through, or that you used yourself?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, I guess kind of getting away from the 4-H side of things and more into kind of the steps that I've taken to kind of get to where I am, is I think there's a certain element of the fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. And I remember watching a movie with Will Smith in it, and it was about like these aliens who could sense fear in humans, and that's kind of what they fed off of. And there was a quote from Will Smith in that particular movie, and I'll just kind of paraphrase it, but essentially what he was saying is fear is a creation of your own mind. It's afraid of what might happen. And, you know, that was something that really, really stuck with me. And I remember, you know, being able to recognize times when maybe I was afraid, but also recognizing that, hey, this is crap. This is something that I'm creating. And what I'm creating inside of my head might not even happen. And just kind of being aware of how your mind works sometimes, and just being able to push past it and recognizing that there are certain times where you don't have control, and, you know, that's okay. And I think, again, that quote is something that stuck with me. And I tried to channel that fear into more of a focus. You know, growing up being involved in sports and a lot of, I was into motocross and snowboarding and a lot of adrenaline activities. And anytime I was afraid to hit a jump, you know, I'd be terrified, and I would kind of channel that fear into a focus and visualizing success of landing that jump. And I think that whole mentality has kind of transitioned into my professional career. Anytime I'm afraid to take a leap or afraid to make a change, I try to channel that fear into a focus that allows me to visualize what steps need to be taken to accomplish whatever goal that I've set forth.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that was a great message. I love it. Thank you. So, so moving forward, as you've been down this path and you continue to go down this path, what steps are you taking currently? In our discussion that we've had, we've talked about this journey that you are currently on and finding where you're going, and you've told me you're not really sure where that is yet. So how do you move forward with that? Well, I don't know what I'm doing or where I'm going.
Oh man, that's another great question. And I think one thing that kind of keeps me going is continuing to learn. And, you know, I'm quite happy in the industry that I am and the work that I'm doing. And, you know, one thing that I try to do is continue to learn about my industry and new processes and new systems and new technology that I can learn. I try to jump into that and try to apply that to my work. I'm trying to be as good as I can as what I'm doing right now. And the thought process behind that is, you know, what I'm learning right now is going to be able to prepare me for whatever comes next. So although I don't know what's next, whether that's, you know, continuing down the digital marketing path or doing my own thing, you know, really try to make the most of my current situation and learn as much as I possibly can in preparation for whatever's next.
Mm-hmm. Once again, another great comment. You're full of great wisdom, which is why you're here today.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So I love that you're just so ready, and that flexibility you talked about. You're so ready and open to whatever does come next. You don't necessarily have this thought out plan or intention, but you're always actively searching for that next step and open to what that's going to be. What is the universe, if you will? What is it going to bring my way?
So you're asking what will the universe bring my way?
Well, no, I'm just making a statement that
that's what I'm hearing.
And what you're saying is that you're just open to whatever it brings to me.
Well, I think when I was a kid, I wouldn't say that I was closed off or anything like that. I mean, I definitely kind of did my own thing and I was very independent. But I remember we had some family friends who came up and they had some kids who were probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 years younger than my brother. And they invited my brother and I to go to the theme park with them. And I was just like, you know, I'm not really into it. And Jimmy was the father of the kids, and he was a great guy. And I remember him saying to me, he's like, you know, opportunity doesn't come knocking all the time. And it's, you know, when it does come knocking, you should really take into consideration what your options are and go after it. And I think that was something that stuck with me. And it, I think, allowed me to continue to be open to so many things. Because it's true, you know, when opportunity doesn't always come knocking at the door, and, you know, when it does, I think you have to be ready to jump after it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I see often that so many people have opportunities right in front of them, and because they're not open to what those opportunities are, they completely miss them.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of that has to do with human nature and just being afraid of change. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's so important to kind of push yourself outside of your comfort zone, because that's, you know, that's really where the growth happens. You know, I wouldn't be where I am today if I was kind of afraid of change or afraid of to take those leaps. And I just think being open to those opportunities is so important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And speaking of opportunities, David, we've talked about your past as a child and your experience with learning entrepreneurship and responsibility through the 4-H process. And then you've shared a little bit about what you're currently up to in the marketing and digital world. And when I introduced you, I'd mentioned that you had worked as a certified snowboard instructor. And I would like to get into that a little bit. Where did you end up going with that? Are you still doing that? Is that something that was just temporary? Why did you end up getting into it? And what's your intention?
Oh, good question. So when I was working as a snowboard instructor, you know, at first I was like, this is great. You know, I'm outside all the time. I'm, you know, essentially I'm playing around in the snow and I'm getting to interact with all these like really, really interesting people. I remember thinking to myself, I was like, I could do this. I could open up a school and, you know, I could do this for myself. And, you know, traveling around and being in airports and train stations and stuff, you know, having a lot of time to think about this. I eventually came down to the idea of wanting to start up a type of guiding service here in the Pacific Northwest. But I didn't really know how to do it or, you know, I just didn't even know where to start. And that was actually one of the great things about working where I'm at right now, is it just opened up my eyes as to how to go about that process. So learning, you know, a little bit about web design and development and search engine optimization and just digital advertising as a whole. You know, that summer, within 3 months of being on the job, I went home and I started working on a website. And I, you know, the idea behind it was to create a snowboard school here in the Pacific Northwest that allowed a lot of flexibility in where lessons were taught, the type of lessons that were taught. And it was kind of, it's something that I still do today. It's something that was super exciting in the beginning. And it was a learning process. You know, it was, you know, one of those things where I was like, well, I don't know if this is technically legal. You know, it's definitely more of a side hustle is what I would call it. But it's given me a lot of insights into some of the troubles that local business owners can have on a very small level. And I guess what I, you know, end up doing is, obviously, you know, I'd meet these students at the mountain, try to focus on private snowboard lessons, as, you know, I really think that's where a lot of the value comes for the student. You can just learn a lot more. It's much more hands-on. And it's been one of those things that has been a lot of fun, but at the same time, you know, it's also something where, you know, I see it taking away my own personal enjoyment from snowboarding. Mm-hmm. And while it's been a great learning process, I kind of go back and forth between, well, you know, do I want to push this a little bit more and, you know, get out of the weeds and get more into the management of it, and start hiring some snowboard instructors. And it's something that I do go back and forth on quite a bit. And, you know, do I make a push to actually promote this? Because it's something that, you know, I've really only done or grown organically from a search engine point of view. And it's really just inbound leads at this point. But it's, you know, hey, do I actually do some outbound work on this, on this particular project to see what I can make it. And that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, well, do I continue doing what it is and just, you know, be pretty selective about the students that I take, or do I go ahead and just make a big push for it this upcoming winter and see what can happen?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what I heard in that is, even though you're not quite sure what direction you want to go with that, I heard how you've used that really as a tool for you to learn a lot about business, which has really helped you in the career that you're in currently.
Yeah, I think what it's really allowed me to do is kind of empathize with some of the clients that I work with. You know, if they're going through a hard time, or, you know, they're having a hard time, you know, justifying a certain budget on a project, you know, I can really relate to that because, you know, it is time consuming. There are still expenses in what I'm doing. And, you know, I think it's because it becomes as a local business owner, you know, that's your creation. That's kind of your baby. You're putting everything that you have into it. And every dollar counts in that sense. And, you know, even though I've worked at a much smaller scale, you know, I could really begin to understand that and some of the struggles that come with that. And I just think it makes for a much more personal client relationship. The fact that I've been able to kind of go through some of those same struggles with them on a different scale, though.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what great value that is. I know so many people, so many businesses that are in business for helping other businesses, yet the business itself obviously has experience in business, but a lot of times the people that work for the business that are out there doing the work and helping other businesses, they're doing it without a true understanding of what goes on for that person, what goes on for that business owner, and what incredible value you have to add to those business owners because you have experienced a lot of that yourself.
Yeah, I think, you know, it just makes for a much more honest conversation too. And, you know, I think that honesty is, I mean, the honesty is key in everything. And, you know, just being able to bring that to the table and have a real conversation about it, I think just, you know, it adds a lot of value, not only from where I'm working at and, you know, within my coworkers and stuff, but again, with those clients. And yeah, you can, it's just a learning process, and you can take what you learn from this and apply it to any new endeavor that you decide to jump into.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love it. And I've really enjoyed this conversation with you, David. I myself have learned a lot from you. It's been fun getting to know more about your story. It's a very fascinating story, and you've shared so many things in there that the listeners can glean from and gain some tips and ideas on getting through those challenges that they face. And even though, as you've talked about, you have this path that you're on and you're not really sure where it's going and what direction you want to take, yet at the same time you're flexible and you're open to opportunity, I have no doubt that many great things will come your way, and that you will find, again, you've had a lot of successes throughout your life, and I know that you will find many more, even greater successes. And with that thought, I would like to close out with one more story, something that you shared with me and I was very intrigued by. When you, in working as a snowboarding instructor, you shared with me something about one of your students who was blind that you taught how to snowboard.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah. So, yeah, it was actually super, it was so random. I remember I had never even seen a blind person skiing or snowboarding, or I'd never even heard of it. And I remember getting this inquiry from my website from this guy, Billy. And he was totally upfront. He's like, hey, I just, you know, wanted to say that first things first is I'm legally blind. But I'm into skydiving. I'm into all of this sort of stuff. And I really, really want to learn snowboarding. He's like, if you haven't done this before, I'm totally open to being the guinea pig. And he sent me this whole email. And
I was just like, this is insane. Like, this is like in the best way possible. And I remember just being so inspired by this guy's enthusiasm. And I reached out and I was like, Billy, this is incredible. Yeah, absolutely. I was like, I have never done this before. I can do some research on what's going to be best practices. And I was like, you know, first thing first, honestly, I'm kind of concerned about safety. And I'd love to meet up with coffee with you and just kind of chat through some of the details. And that's kind of how we started. And we grabbed coffee and he just had so much energy and excitement, which was, I wasn't expecting that from a blind person. And it was really eye-opening to kind of see that, you know, someone who had this disability, he didn't think of it as a disability. He just was like, he was living his everyday life and just trying to enjoy as much of life as possible. And, we kind of hashed through the details and, I kind of gave him a checklist of what he was going to need. And we set a date and we went from there. And, you know, we went up to the mountain. We had these neon green vests on. You know, I had one that said instructor, or I think mine said guide, and his said, you know, blind student. And it was a lot of fun. You know, I typically do a 2-hour private lesson. For Billy, I was like, hey, we're probably going to need 4 hours. I was like, I'm not going to charge you for the full 4 hours because this is great. I'm excited for you to be doing this. We did like a discounted rate for him, and it was great. We, like, you know, it was a trial and error. There was a lot of falls. There's a lot of feedback from people on the slopes. They were all coming up to him and they were all super excited for him to be out there and attempting to snowboard. And it was a great environment to kind of be in. And it was an honor to be able to teach him. And, at the end of the day, we got him making, I think he was able to link like 5 or 6 turns together before he would catch an edge. But, you know, for a first day student, he did really well, you know, probably better than people I've taught who can see. And to be able to see someone like Billy overcome those challenges was amazing. And it was really inspiring. And it was an incredible opportunity that I never would have guessed that it's something that I would have done.
Yeah, I love it.
I think to this day, it's still one of the most random things that's ever popped into my life. But man, I'm going to have to reach out to Billy and see if we can get some more snowboard lessons with him and get him better this winter.
Uh-huh. And, you know, most people probably would have just instantly said, no way, that I can't do that. That's not impossible. And would have turned him away. And you were like, wow, let's do this. I'm going to find a way. And so the message I hear in that is really something that I've heard throughout this conversation in your own journey is being able to move forward through blindness.
Yeah.
And yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'll be honest, I'm not a planner. I've always been a big believer. It's like, we'll figure it out, you know? And, we did a little bit of planning in this sense, but I was just, hey, let's go do this. It's not going to be any different than teaching someone else. Might have a couple hiccups here and there, but there's no need to worry about the details of, you know, what could go wrong. Let's try to think about what could go right here and focus on that. And, it was an experience for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you're teaching us, even if you are traveling blind, you can still find your way.
Exactly. 100%.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. If you are looking to reach new levels of success by plowing through your roadblocks, outsmarting your competition, growing a flourishing business, or reaching unparalleled levels of performance, go to www.acceleratedresults365.com or email Catherine@acceleratedresults365.com and learn how you can get started with Accelerated Results 365 today.